Good morning with KUAC News. I'm Dan Bross. Cases involving dead and missing travelers in northern British Columbia are prompting concern about a serial killer. A young couple were found murdered along the Alcan near Liard Hot Springs July 15th. Minimal information has been provided about the case, but during a press conference yesterday, Royal Canadian Mounted Police spokesperson Janelle Choyette said that 23-year-old Lucas Fowler of Australia and 24-year-old American China Dees of North Carolina were shot to death near their vehicle.
We can now confirm that China and Lucas were the victims of gun violence, and that their van, a 1986 blue Chevrolet van with Alberta plates, was owned by Lucas Fowler and was being used by the couple to explore northern British Columbia.
Choyette shared a sketch of a man seen by a witness talking with the couple the previous day.
It's my understanding that there were no words that the witness could speak to, that they witnessed it as they were driving by and then provided the composite sketch.
Choyette says the man is not currently a suspect, but that police are trying to identify him and want to talk to him. Meanwhile, RCMP also addressed another case about 300 miles away along the Cassiar Highway, where on July 19th, a yet-to-be-identified man was found dead at a highway pullout near where a truck camper burned the same day. The camper belongs to a pair of teenagers from southern BC. RCMP says the young men had traveled to Whitehorse to look for work, and their parents have not heard from them in recent days. Choyette says it's unclear if the cases are connected.
It's unusual to have two major investigations undergoing of this nature in northern BC at the same time. And so we recognize that there is a possibility that these could be linked.
RCMP do not consider the missing teens suspects. Choyette would not comment on the possibility of a serial killer, but says the RCMP is in contact with law enforcement agencies across the region, including in Alaska, about the cases.
We are mindful that this is an area of seasonal tourists and travelers and campers from abroad, as well as motorists and businesses moving from BC, Alberta, and the Northwest Territories, the Yukon, and Alaska. We are asking those who may have been in the area during the times we have listed and may have information or seen anything or have dash cam video to please call our tip line.
Choyette urged people traveling the Cassiar, Alcan, and other northern routes to take extra precautions, including only camping in established areas and keeping in contact with family about travel plans. The State House Finance Committee raised its proposal for the permanent fund dividend to $1,600. Alaska Public Media and KTOO report that a new version of a bill setting this fall's dividend amount would also restore funding for most items vetoed by Governor Mike Dunleavy. It would accept $89 million in vetoes, including a $20 million reduction in funding for the University of Alaska and a $49 million cut to school bond debt reimbursement and school construction. Nome Democratic Representative Neil Foster says the bill strikes a balance.
This was just trying to balance all the different interests of folks who wanted more cuts, folks who wanted a higher PFD, folks who didn't want to go into savings.
Foster noted that the measure relies on using all $172 million remaining in the statutory budget reserve. Wasilla Republican Representative Colleen Sullivan Leonard says the state should use more permanent fund earnings to pay out the full amount of permanent fund dividends according to a 1982 formula.
I just need to make this statement and ask how we've come to this decision of just not coming to the earnings reserve account to pay for a full statutory PFD. The funds are there. The funds are there to pay for general government. They're there to pay for the disbursement of the statutory permanent fund.
Paying a full $3,000 PFD this fall would require the state to violate a law that limits the amount drawn from the permanent fund earnings. Members of both legislative majority caucuses say that would threaten the long-term sustainability of dividends, state services, and Alaska's economy. If the legislature passes the bill without the full PFD, Governor Dunleavy could veto it. Meanwhile, a House vote to fund the capital budget fell one vote short yesterday. All 23 House majority members and five minority caucus Republicans voted to fund the capital budget by drawing from a state savings account, the Constitutional Budget Reserve, or CBR. Anchorage Republican and Minority Caucus member Sarah Rasmussen voted for the funding.
Funding this budget through the CBR is not the path I would have personally chosen. Again, with little compromise reached in the last month, I feel that the best path forward for all Alaskans, and specifically my neighbors in Sand Lake who have reached out to me, is to support funding the capital budget, including almost $1 billion of federal match.
Seven other Minority Caucus Republicans voted against it, and four were absent, leaving the bill one vote short of the 30, or three-quarters of the chamber needed to tap the CBR. Opponents of the draw say they're concerned about a provision that would allow the reserve to fund future spending bills this session. Wasilla Republican David Eastman says this takes power away from the minority since future bills won't require 30 votes.
I understand that if it's a majority vote only, my vote will not be considered and my district will not be represented, so I'll be a no vote today.
Dillingham Independent and House Speaker Bryce Edgman says the House will vote on the bill again before the end of the month. University of Alaska regents have adopted a declaration of financial exigency, enabling immediate budget cutbacks, including expedited faculty layoffs. Regents approved the declaration at a meeting in Anchorage yesterday in response to an over 40% reduction in state funding. Board Chair John Davies called it a sad day and one that comes despite overwhelming public support for the university, as demonstrated during statewide public hearings last week, during which he says 86% of those who testified spoke in support of restoring university and other state funding vetoed by Governor Dunleavy.
But on the other hand, we have, as has been indicated, a fiduciary responsibility to make sure that the institution survives. And I think, unfortunately, we are right now grappling with survival.
Regents approved the exigency declaration 10-1. Regent Lisa Parker was the sole no vote and pointed out that exigency itself is not a plan.
I don't see through this declaration that we're going to be able to be saving $11 million a month to reduce that burn rate. That's not been identified.
The second portion of the regents' meeting focused on how the university can actually cut costs. UA President Jim Johnson outlined three avenues.
We can save the money closing campuses, and we can save the money by shrinking each one of the campuses within our current university structure, or we can re-envision how we serve the state's higher education needs.
Johnson favored the third, or single university model, in which all UA campuses work together to support core areas of study.
So a College of Engineering, education, management, business, etc., along down the line. Through a common curriculum and calendar, course blocks, a common bill, a common transcript, a common application.
Johnson said courses would be taught in person and online, and the ratio of students to faculty would increase. University of Alaska Anchorage Chancellor Kathy Sandine questioned how long it could take to make such a fundamental shift and said individual campuses are already cutting costs.
And I think that gives us time to analyze a major structural change, and I think it's the quickest path forward to meeting these reductions.
The UAS and UAF chancellors also expressed concern about centralizing the system, but President Johnson stressed that individual campus changes would have to be very dramatic to meet the cut. Regents asked Johnson to bring more detailed analysis of downsizing options to a July 30th Regents meeting. I'm Dan Bross.